You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening.
Just for fun, I wanted to start with a few lines from one Wendell Berry poem. On one first warm morning of May. I'll read just part of it. Too late for frost, too early for flies. The air carries only birdsong, the long draft of wind through leaves. In this time, I could stay forever. In my wish to stay forever, it stays forever. Is anyone ready to ask or share something? Can you hear okay back there? Yeah.
So I could share. A million years ago when we arrived on the retreat, Francis gave us the forms. And under the question, why have you come on retreat, I wrote, to fall apart. I'm going to be much more careful next time. So I have complex PTSD, and one of the symptoms is these muscle spasms that nearly 20 years ago, and they were very, very bad. Then I was pretty much housebound for a while, and now they're mainly a few as a signal that I'm tired, and then occasionally I have to cancel plans, maybe for a day. So I wasn't expecting this to be what happened. And there is a part of me that wishes I was the kind of person who would just go to Tenerife like anyone else. But this is where I've spent my money and my time. But also, you know, what else is there to do? But in the kind of not being able to walk by myself, there were a couple of helpful thoughts. The first one was that some people, that is always how it is for them. They always walk like that or have to get around. And some people can't walk at all. Maybe they're paralyzed. and what a luxury it is to be able to walk. And then the other thought, which is new, is my brand new thought, is that I'm really grateful that the trauma manifests, so it's childhood trauma, as you can imagine. I'm really grateful that it manifests in this way, because for my stepfather, it manifests as abusing people. Hmm. And then the other thing is that it's 10 years, I worked out it's 10 years since I went on my first deep rest retreat, which is a very neat kind of benchmark. And I was thinking about how desolate my life was then. I had one friend. I was on retreat with my one friend. and now there are many rich threads to my life and work. And I kept having the image of my son, my son's face. And I feel like I was very lucky just before we came. I came here, literally I'd just been had the whole weekend in a bluebell wood camping in our beloved bell tent, which we decorate with three types of bunting, fairy lights, the works. And so I had a chance to do the thing that I always forget to do, which is to really see him. And that's what's been in my head, is like there was this moment where he was on my lap and his face was so dirty, especially around the nostrils because he'd been picking his nose. And his breath was really smelly. And I just couldn't stop kissing him, you know. And the last thing is just one thing that I noticed, a bit like Jax and Saran, so after the initial humiliation and embarrassment of being in public, being in this state, it became kind of fun to work out how was the best way to walk. Like there was this kind of Leia called it my duck walk, you know, this kind of like shuffling. And there was a... I kind of realised that when I had, like, in my head, when I was trying to get somewhere, when I was focused on the place, that I couldn't actually... It made it worse, then the spasms would be much worse. And if I just noticed where I was... and enjoyed the flowers and whatever was next to me, like it was, it eased. And there is a question for Jaya. So the question is, I know because I've been on enough retreats that I will mostly forget that lesson. Like I know that I will mostly forget. I guess my question is, so what is the relationship between my retreat life and, maybe you don't know, like my life and retreat life? If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I know there is a reality, like when someone else talked about the fitting in, there is a reality to the survival when you're in the culture. Like there's a reality that I have to be normal enough that my son gets birthday invitations. And my partner has to do a job that's giving him RSI because we haven't got another idea right now. You know, there's a reality to the survival. And I think my question, like now and probably for the rest of my life, is how to move beyond survival. So there's like a big ball of questions for you, Jaya.
Yeah. Thank you. So I think in the way that it's happened, having the chance to go on retreat and then be home and then retreat and home over 10 years, and what would you say, like, got you there to retreat? You were tricked. Same word.
Someone told me that there was this thing called the French Yatra, but he didn't tell me exactly what it was. It just sounded like a cheap holiday. He didn't really explain. And then I hated every minute of that French Yatra. Like, it was so hard. Like, and then I was at the airport with Iris, coming home from the hated Yatra, and she mentioned there's another one in a few weeks with these open Dharma people, and for some reason I booked on it.
Why? Really, why?
I think because of the people, like, because of the wildness of the people, like,
How did, like, you know before you, when you booked, you hadn't seen us?
Oh, no, on your one. I guess that is not entirely true, that there was something in the French Yatra it wasn't home, but it was, like, there was something enough. I don't know, it felt like, it's not in the head, like, mm-hmm. None of it feels in the mind. Like, I don't understand any of this in my mind.
Right, but what happened?
When?
That you booked for a retreat after hating the Yatra.
What happened?
And then you went to another one, and then you went to Dharmaloka.
Well, look, I mean, when I came on your Yatra, you know, when you and Gemma spoke, I mean, I wept and wept and wept, you know, and it was like a...
But what took you to the retreat? You hadn't heard us speak. There wasn't that many things online at that time. Now I meet people and they say, oh, I listen to you all the time.
It wasn't
like that. Even 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know. There was, like,
yes, you do. But it may be on the spot, etc. Not fair to ask.
Yeah.
But you do know.
I know.
Maybe not in a way that can go be described in words, but so I think on retreat there is the chance to, like, a little bit get to know, like, what are the materials of a life, what is a body sensation, what is a thought, and these experiments that we make. And somehow or other, there's part of it is somehow or other, whether you feel silent or not, you're in a field. Some kind of energy field, not only like. Something that even early on in the first couple of days, when really you didn't feel settled and but the kitchen and managing team wasn't in the hall all the time and would come in and be like, whoa. So being in a field. It's like different layers, I think, basically of Buddha family, I can say. So different ways of family of life. And then another aspect is along the way on the retreats, moments happen organically, like today we're on our hands and knees on the landing of the stairs. And we can laugh and feel each other. So I think the insights like that come all the way up to the conceptual mind, like the observation that it goes well, it works well, like Jacques Husserin, it works well when I'm just with what I'm with, and I am where I am, that works better. Mm-hmm. And it works better when I let someone stand next to me, or just outside the door, you know, or whatever, when needed. And so it's like, it's a kind of, it's such a family that it's continually, we're continually reminded of awakening potential and happening here at home. But not like here. It's in the field, but it's here. And so we really get the chance to find out that we're not in isolation, and we're not also dependent for awakening on something outside. Just keeps, it keeps reminding, those seeds keep getting what they need. So another way to talk about it is like using the word love. Not to say that you booked on the retreat with me and Gemma 11 years ago, almost, because I was pregnant. Because you loved us. And that's what's really cool, is like, what did you love? Where did that love come from? Who decided to let that love book you? The soft spot, making space, noticing space, being moved is life awakening. And it's awakening to also this interrelatedness, we could say. Finding that we're in conversation. And so in all these deep, deep ways. That's not only during the time of the retreat. Don't worry, it's not a cult. Like, but it has also to do with, we why I use the phrase Buddha family is part of what happens. When we find that, like, we're in the family of life already. In the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, they have something they call the five Buddha families. And there's a mandala of the five Buddha families. Have you heard the word mandala? Do you know what it is? Is that something everybody's seen around, kind of, somehow or other? Yeah, good. It's hard to find anyone that would define it. It's interesting. So has everyone somewhere seen a photo of a painting or a painting or even the sand mandalas that they do or the three-dimensional mandalas that sometimes you can find? When I said field, we could also call it mandala. And I've been thinking this week, talking about yesterday, so moving from that old, cold version of queenly to finding the nobility, the dignity, and the humility, so the ground and the up and the down. And it's really, that's one of the things, basically, what our insights are about, is finding that the up and the down are not separate. The lofty and the earthy are not separate. The clunky and the that we take as humiliating until we remember that we are human. All those dynamics, all those like puzzles that were given, like I mentioned with Jacques Lucéran losing the use of his eyes. Like, we could just spend a lifetime like, but why? And somehow he was blessed with parents that just never once said, what a problem, what bad luck, not even once. Imagine. Buddha family. That there's not anything that puts you out of the Buddha family. Nothing that puts us out of touch with the conversation. It's a conversation that's as big as a mountain, Himalayan, lifetimes. So I was thinking, like, when we think about, we need to find some new kind of government instead of, you know, autocracy or theocracy or aristocracy. Even democracy didn't really work. And I think instead of changing the prefix, let's address the suffix. Instead of something crusty, instead of some kind of rules imposed. So in the poem, The Sycamore, yesterday, Wendell Berry addresses life, his family, the sycamore tree, and he says, I recognize in you a principle, an indwelling, greater than yourself, the same as yourself and greater, sorry. Organically, out of the situation, what ripens? And then I thought, well, maybe the word mandala instead of something akrasi. Something mandala. So mandala, it could be energy field. could be like a realm. It could be when there's the sense of wholeness that allows wholeness within wholeness. It's not afraid of diversity or the unexpected. So it's not like that kind of bouncer at the door. What do you call them? We call them bouncers at the door of the bar, whatever, bouncer, yeah. That's checking, like, do you have, are you in this family? Do you have the right name? Or do you have the right skin color? Or have you done enough retreats? Did you experience 5 minutes of peace in the last 45-minute meditation or not? We're watching you. We're watching you. From the outside. Or that, like, meeting inside, crossing the path of love and inside. What happens in that space? So we leave space, and what happens? It's like the emergence of some kind of form, some kind of ways of things falling into place, a wider harmony that accommodates that things can, not because everything influences itself, each other, and it's a downward spiral, but really working with, not avoiding the vulnerability, not ignoring, not in denial about how much every little thing, the time of day, the exact temperature and speed of the breeze, the air pressure, all right now are affecting every one of our minds. Like it's mind-blowing. But not that freaking out, but that all is family. Being in the family, being inside the path of love. The mutual influence towards, if you like, an upward spiral or an ever more accommodating spiral. The edge of discovery being one of the most interesting parts. And the ground and simplicity, ordinariness, meeting, staying in the conversation, being another most interesting part. So in a mandala, there's a center and there's directions. And every part is different from every other part. What's in the east is eastern. What's in the west is western. What's in the south is about the south, the qualities of the south. And they have their own organic qualities. It's not just like a conceptual framework applied. So in the mandala of the five Buddha families, for example, in the north, in this mandala, is green, and it's Karma Buddha. It's the awakening of action. All accomplishing action is the name of that Buddha. The same energy of all accomplishing action Buddha, when it gets fraught or disconnects from the family, seemingly to itself, we feel left out, we feel some form of lack or problem. We don't recognize this is my family. Then the energy that would be all accomplishing action, so which is summertime, so much going on, so much green, what is happening is fear. And so their understanding in that mandala is the energy of fear, the same energy awakened, is all accomplishing action Buddha. It's not a different realm, it's in the same realm with the same energy. In the east, in that mandala. It's also not that there is only one way that's right, which is so cool, especially for us. We take on some of these Eastern traditions. So for example, like if you've heard of the five precepts that are sometimes given or taken at the beginning of a retreat period, the Western mind takes it as, I vow never to harm. And it's a total setup to be occupied with what's superficial. And of course, constantly being wrong, personally wrong. And the actual language of it is, I set my feet to walk on the path towards, we could say, discovering, not harming. So it's not banishing violence and aggression and thereby perpetuating it. It's finding it all in the family in a way that's uplifting, that's fruitful, and freeing. And a kind of discovering that is together in the ground of togetherness and in the ground of our own resources and in a kind of breakthrough that's also both together and both so intimately one's own. So in the East, in this Buddha, five Buddha family mandala, is the Buddha of mirror-like wisdom. So clarity, and there's a sword. Like keeping the sword in the family is asking for less trouble, I think, than trying to get rid of the sword. What would be useful with sharpness? What would be useful with cutting? What would be fruitful? What would serve life? When there's agitation and interference in the energy of this Buddha family, it's anger. And we talked this morning about how anger can be walking the path on the way towards discovering clarity. No. Or standing my ground. It's not to say that anger is Buddha, but it's also not to say that it's not. It is on the way. It can be invited to be on the way to utter clarity, unshaking.
Sorry, can you put that last word?
Utter clarity, unshaking. Usually when we look for clarity, it's mental. It's usually a decision-making process between an either and an or. And this family thing is and. Should I give up because it's so difficult? Is this the time to use the sword? Is this the time to say no? Or is this the time to find how this very same forces could come towards liftoff dropping back into family, and then it sort of either or drops into and. And that's a crucial difference. The non-separation of transcendence and immanence, being right here, and that being right here is enough. And doesn't mean it's not also on the way to somewhere. That shift from either or to and, if I can find, and there's a short Kabir poem. Yes. Kabir says, clarity comes when the musician lives in your heart. The either-or mind and the way, the kind of thinking that's available, and then feeling the way of being family, already in, already belonging, already everything at play. All these energies that are made of awakening. Buddha just means awake. And then the kind of thinking, having crossed the path of love, coming inside with some protection from that watching, judging, comparing, competing. Look of lack, the lack look. Another kind of mind, another kind of thinking comes available. We could call it wildness in contrast with the amount of controlling that we've been educated into. Or music, another kind of language that's not only about the conceptual, which is such a poor part of what's being communicated in the conversation. Any questions or anything to share or clarify so far?
I just want to ask about understanding. I've been struggling this afternoon with.
Sorry, I can't hear.
Sorry, I've been struggling this afternoon with thinking a lot, and over lunchtime it was just. There was this kind of rampant thinking, but it was. It was quite, it was sort of present moment thinking, and I was almost trying to desperately grab at something. I guess I want to ask about words and the thinking that is fruitful thinking and the thinking that isn't. and it all feels unwanted. I don't want any of it. I don't want it at all. And I feel like that it's such a thing for me. I've such a busy mind. So I guess I just wanted clarity on that. on fruitful thinking, you know, what's okay.
Good. So then the more honesty came out at the end. That from the outside watching what's okay and what's not okay. This would be okay, or is this okay? Is that? And inside, you know, that from the attitude of welcome, it's all okay, it's all happening, the assumption that it's all in, it's all included, it's all part of the family, it's all made of awakened energy, or potentially awakened and the same material, that shift of attitude makes all the difference. And so, and then just for the conceptual mind, usually the fruitful thinking is just here and there, like here and there, once in a while. But there's a way of receiving that unfruitful thinking, feeling the dryness, the speed, the rhythm of it, all of that communicating distress, and feeling split because that part of me is outside the passive love and wants to be in, thinks it doesn't belong. Because it thinks it doesn't belong, it can't get in, because it's like the contractions are there, and yet is already in from the point of view of in. Doesn't mean it's easy. We feel, I think, one of the hard things is like that something would be bigger than me. When I'm feeling small, it feels intimidating and scary, and I assume it must be if it's bigger than me, judging me, feeling I haven't quite measured up, etc. Like our association between bigger than me, more powerful than me, when I'm small and contracted and that's all I am, that's the downward spiral.
It was interesting because it, as I think you said earlier about it, I can't remember the word you used, but that it's all part of something, it's showing something, the sense of it's showing something. I think that was really important to hear because it's a very long, and I think what came out at the end of it was very intense, and I think that's one, really important.
Yeah. So also the five signs of breakthrough on the board, where we start to recognize the kind of peristaltic, so like the movement of the intestines, contracting, releasing, undulating. It's similar as we're digesting our experience. That those contractions where it's like tons of thinking that you don't want, that state of mind. As a natural occurrence, just so near the threshold, so near the pass of love. And so afraid of that belonging. Though the sense of separation hurts so much, and that is our wound and our misunderstanding, but then the fear of losing my separation, that I think of as my protection, or I don't think of, but I kind of came to understand as my protection. So the last couplet of the longer Kabir poem. Kahe Kabir suno bhai sadho ananda bhayo hai. So it's a kind of, they put a signature into the poem. The name of the poet says, Kabir Kahe, Kabir says. And he's saying it to the fellow journeyers, the Buddha family. And what he says is, there are waves of bliss. Ananda Bhayo Hai. Usually our description of a retreat is not that. We describe from the other side that in the what, from one point of view of belonging, are waves of bliss. We're usually feeling more attracted and interested and worried about the waves of pain. But how much of that is painful because we assume that it kicks me out of the family? That that's in the way of my awakening, rather than part of the way of my awakening. And again, it's just that so simple shift makes all the difference. Doesn't mean it's easy to find or fall into, or, but it also, in a way, there's a way that it's inescapable. Like Danielle, without wanting to, booked on that first retreat. Or another yatra fall. The second line of the last couplet of the Kabir poem is Bajata anahata dholare tohe. Bajata is like, either it could be singing or beating a drum. In this case, it's more of a drum thing. Anahata is the heart. And especially, it's what they call the unstruck song of the heart, is transmitting itself. Dolere. So we could bhaj a bhajan, a repetitive song. We could bhaj a drum. The heart is bhajing itself. Without any, like when Danielle is asking, like, sort of, how do I connect retreat and the rest? As if they're different. Did I just say that?
Yes.
Of course, from one point of view, they're so different. And so much to learn from both, from the differences. So much to like pick up each time, a little bit more grass sticking to us. From retreat, comes along to daily life, messes up the house. And then from the house, back on retreat. From the work, back on retreat. But when there's space, and there is, and even when it's not noticeable as space, it's noticeable as noticing something. So we notice anger, or we notice freak out, whatever. It's also space. When there's space, and the more we find that we are allowed, we have permission to enter that mandala, to enjoy, that's to enjoy that space, and to enjoy what happens in that space, which is unpredictable, organic, emergence. Divine. So I'm going to say something a little bit weird, maybe, that sometimes you might have more of a feeling of a bit of space and just leaving it. Sometimes that might feel like just no demand, no need, just for a split second or so, that anything be different. That any way that it could be different, what matters is not that. Or you meet yourself, giving yourself a tea and letting yourself drink it. In the so simple things. sometimes a feeling of space. And I think that we tend to stick to an idea of space then and not allow what happens next, naturally, the bhajjata anahata dolare, that actually there's some kind of gift. That the heart, which is base, is sounding without anyone there to beat it or touch it or play it. Play it, that's a better way of translating bhaj. That it plays itself. And the quality of that is kind of sanctity. Sanctity. Which means there's power. That might, that doesn't disturb what's sort of important. It does disturb what's sort of disturbed. And coming into a mode of reverence for that sacredness, it can feel like yum, it can feel like I can, moving a single muscle would stir the pond, and we don't. It could feel like really a song, a note in the heart. It's not one thing that it might feel like, the sacredness. Being in that conversation, not leaving because we're small. Of shame, because of believing in lack. So there may be shame in believing in lack. So what? Feeling moved, and the sort of wonder of being part of, being in our conversation. With that big of a wholeness, that's like, really? Me? But not stopping there, like, really me? Yes. And then getting on with reverence. Doing what needs to be done. Mostly that's very here and now. And sometimes, here and now, comes that musician's that thought that's like, oh yes, that's what's going to be tomorrow, a good idea for tomorrow. That helpful thought. And it's like music, not like recorded music. Like there's that one way for that note to be played out. And we're still in the music, still in the conversation, still enjoying the life giving that abundance of here-ness, welcome, belonging, creativity, beyondness, beyond what we thought. Especially so much beyond how we thought there's a break between sky and earth, what's hard and what's easy. What's clunky and what's lofty? What's personal and what's beyond? A downward spiral and a transcendence spiral. From the big, there's room for the small. And then there's much to do. But it's not like doing. And the doing is sort of, it has that clarity of the musician in the heart. We keep on feeling what's in harmony with the song. And the song also can change as we go along. So be findable. Let the music find you. Be findable. Let sanctity come about through your belonging. Staying in the conversation that is with all those currents. So that means staying in a conversation without knowing what to say. And then we do find. It's an Ojibwa saying from the northern middle part of what's now the United States, the Ojibwa people. Something like we could say in the language of this week, I keep thinking me about me. Me about me. All day long. And in the night. And all the while, I'm carried across the sky by a great wind. All the while, I'm carried across the sky by a great wind.